Welcome to the Dahlgren Centennial Celebration, a century of innovation. We hope that this and our many other products, events, and offerings showcase Dahlgren's accomplishments during its last 100 years. Throughout our history, we've interviewed some of the most prominent minds, leaders, and innovators that have been here, and we're opening up the vault to share them with you this year. Today, we are honored to listen to Woodrow Saft, the former superintendent of ordnance at Dahlgren. Mr. Saft worked at Dahlgren for nearly 40 years, starting in 1943, and was considered an expert in naval guns. He was especially involved in the testing of the 16-inch guns at Dahlgren.
My name is Woodrow W. Saft. I'm a former superintendent of ordnance working here at Dahlgren for 38 years. One of the primary weapons that we tested during that period of time was the 16-inch. The 16-inch fired a projectile which, similar to what I'm standing by here, to weigh about 2,700 pounds. And to propel this projectile required 600 pounds of smokeless propellant. And it would be fired in a 16-inch gun. We fired every gun used by the United States Navy, not only during war, but pre-World War II, on through the Korean and Vietnam situation. This gun weighs about 100 ton, and the gun itself, excluding the slide and the girder mechanism, designed to be used on the modern battleships. The United States Navy used this gun. And as the ships were being recommissioned, they were equipped for heavy weapons of this type. Then the new battleships were, as they were built, were all built to this, using this gun. It being through a metallurgy technique that they developed, these guns were radio expanded. Thereby, they reduced the amount of weight after they were mounted aboard ship. But they were very effective from the World War II, Vietnam, and also a Korean engagement. Then beyond that, we used to test every caliber gun used by the United States Navy, from the 20 millimeter, 1.1, the 40 millimeter, and the 40 millimeter replaced the 1.1 automatic gun, which we had a form of it adopted from the British Navy until we could build a replacement for it, which was the 1.1. And it later was replaced by the 40 millimeter. The 40 millimeter mount came in a singles, double, and a quad. And then following that, we developed the 5-inch gun, 5-inch 38, which became the workhorse of the World War II, because it replaced the old 5-inch 25, and it was had a higher rate of fire and an increased range, and became the workhorse of the United States Navy for surface warfare. Following that, we developed the 6-inch 47, which is a primary armament to go on board the light cruisers, the United States Navy. They were sacrificing armor protection in order to accommodate the increased speed of the ship that developed during the war. Then following the 6-inch 47, we developed other guns. First was the 8-inch 55, and the original was the old Wichita class. It was a build-up gun and quite heavy and used bag ammunition, as well as later 8-inch, until we developed the automatic. We developed the 8-inch 55 caliber automatic on the late model heavy cruiser in the United States Navy. That meant that the cartridge, the propellant was contained within the cartridge, and the cartridge and projectile were loaded into a tray and fired and loaded into the gun as a single operation. Following that, we had a variety of weapons, research weapons, but we led up to the development of the 16-inch gun. But I started out as a gunner's mate in the United States Navy on the battleship Pennsylvania. And after 5 years, I accepted my discharge and came to work at Dahlgren as a civilian. And in 1943, I felt it was my responsibility to go back in the Navy for which I had been trained. I reported back to the Navy in 1943, and then the first thing they did is sent me to the gun factory, which I attended a training course in every hydraulic power drive of every conventional weapon in the United States Navy. From there, I went aboard the light cruiser CL-102, commissioning her at Newport News. Following the commissioning of her and shakedown crews, I came back to Philadelphia. While I was at Philadelphia, the war ended, and there, highest on the list for people with the rating for discharge, I was accepted discharge rather than continuing in the Navy and came back to Dahlgren. And through substantial advancements from leading man, quarterman, chief quarterman, foreman, and later superintendent of ordnance, worked at the main range for 1941, with 2 years back in the Navy, and back in 45 through December of 1974, in which I retired. Last 5 years of that time frame, I was assigned a head of department as a weapons specialist and traveled worldwide troubleshooting problems in conventional weapons in the United States Navy, which involved my travel to the Philippines, to Vietnam, to the Mediterranean, to France, to Cuba, and things of that nature. One of the things that I remember vividly is my trip to Cuba. The ship had a double-loaded 5-inch gun and it was pointing overland to Cuba. And they asked me to go down and assist in unloading that gun. Well, it was a double load and the interlock system wouldn't operate because the cartridge case sheared off. So I had experienced that in our experimental work at Dahlgren. Therefore, I had a special tool made where I could pass through the chamber of the gun, and it was spring-loaded so that it expanded in front of the cartridge case and had a screw nut arrangement fastened to the housing of the gun. And after arriving at 7 o'clock in the evening by way of a Learjet, I was able to clear that gun by 11 o'clock at night and relieved an international situation that they were very much concerned about. Then I had a problem with the 16-inch gun here locally, where it had been mothballed in the Navy Yard, Philadelphia. We were getting ready to recommission her, and they discovered that they thought it was a damaged roller path because the atmosphere in the turret was negative, and what it did is it was drawing air through the water shield of the turret, and that air contained moisture being down on the waterfront in the Philadelphia Navy shipyard. They called me up and asked me to inspect it. Well, I had them to turn off center and degrease the roller path, and I found that the roller path was not damaged, it was just discolored. Consequently, they were able to put the ship back on schedule and save 14 months delay in recommissioning her to go to Vietnam. But while I was there, I happened to be informed that there was a problem on turret 2. So I went and looked, and two of the cap square bolts had popped off. And we checked the records, and we found that prior to going to mothballs, turret 1 had been elevated while turret 2 was depressed, and they were trained into each other and cracked that trunnion bearing. Well, I had just previously been visiting on the USS North Carolina, which is a monumental piece in Wilmington, North Carolina. And on there, I learned that the spare parts were still on the ship. So when I was contacted by the lieutenant who was a fitting out officer of the ordnance on that ship, asked about it, and I said, well, if you arrange with the caretaker on the battleship North Carolina in Wilmington, I said, you can get a spare trunnion bearing. It will fit. And the Navy says it won't fit, but I know they're interchangeable because I've done many of them here at Dahlgren, which is part of my routine assignment. So he got that out and put it back into the USS New Jersey, and she then ventured on to Vietnam. Well, I've toured Vietnam shortly after that on a troubleshooting mission of the USS Boston, who had an explosion on that ship. But the New Jersey, when I visited the artillery command centers, every one of them requested fire support of the New Jersey while she was out there. And when I went aboard and her in Long Beach Naval Shipyard after she came back from Vietnam, she was literally worn out. The guns were just smooth. All the rifling were gone. So they had extended a service that was unbelievable to the people of the Armed Forces stationed in Vietnam. While I worked at the main range from 1943 to my transfer to the head of department in 1968 to travel worldwide and troubleshooting conventional weapons in the United States Navy, I was in charge of a workforce of approximately 250 people. And we had about 10 different gun crew assignments. And it was not uncommon when I was working there that I personally fired approximately 100 rounds a day of weapons similar to the 16-inch, and including 16-inch was here. And I worked primarily in firing major caliber weapons for several months, but each of the rounds for the 16-inch were the equivalent of firing the price of a Volkswagen down the river. But those, and they had a workforce including about 20 recorders that had to record all the data of every round fired at the battery. Those rounds included another workforce, which is one of my crews that I was in charge of during the propellant section, and they had to prepare the charges. For instance, on the 16-inch, they had to bag this ammunition in silk bags. It had to take six bags, about 100 pounds in each bag, for each round fired. Then while that was going on, the crew, in addition, were taking care of a 5-inch automatic, a 3-inch, or a 8-inch bag gun, which they had to load those and things of this nature. So the workforce I had was variable. Then in addition, we had a battery to test nothing but fuses at the AA fuse battery. And there we test every production fuse, the 5-inch guns at that battery. And then in addition to that, we had a force which was allied to my group testing the armament that were used on battleships to protect us against the torpedoes. And that was the armament around the waterline of the battleships. And in addition to that, they had an armor plate across the main deck to protect against the aerial bombs dropped from aircraft. The only accessible point that they had on a battleship then of that type was down through the smokestack. And we did, I think, lose one ship by the bomb that went down through the smokestack. And of course, it had a delayed action fuse in those type of bombs, and also a delayed action fuse that they tested for penetration of armor, so that the armor projected would pierce the armor and then explode inside and cause more damage to our enemy ships. So we had a very large variety of people working on all types of weapons, from 20 millimeter to 40 millimeter to 5-inch, 6-inch, 8-inch, 16-inch at this range. Then in addition to that, after the war, we recovered an 18-inch gun from the Japanese, which I understand there's one of the super battleships, and we're armed with the 18-inch gun. Well, we had to test it, of course, so we were able to mount it in one emplacement we had to give us a maximum of 5 degrees elevation. But it was so large and so heavy, and the advantage of that over the 16-inch was not appreciable. So therefore, they stuck with our 16-inch, similar to the one you see in this photograph, which I'm standing by at this time.
Thank you for listening to this week's Dahlgren Centennial Podcast, and hopefully you've learned another interesting aspect of what our people accomplish for the Navy and for our nation. We will continue sharing how Dahlgren is a one-of-a-kind location where innovation is heralded as the hallmark of each individual. Tune in next week to hear from Ed Jones, who lived on the base from 1948 to 1966. Thank you for celebrating the century of innovation with us at Dahlgren.